in this morning service dedication, I said, vast ocean of dazzling light, marked by the waves of coming and going, birth and death. In a way, that's a very flowery language. Could have said, a gentle breeze blowing here and there, clumps of leaves coming together, drifting apart, because that's our life. A gentle breeze that comes together as our life for a little while and then blows apart as our life. Birth, death. But when we don't know who we are, then we don't live our life to the fullness that we are, whether we call the fullness a vast ocean of dazzling light, or we call it a gentle breeze. And this is what I spoke about yesterday, in quoting Joko, on living life without illusions that harm us or harm others. If I say it differently, it's being able to recognize our life for what it is. Or seeing where we miss it because of our narrow vision, because we believe limited capacity to experience and tolerate what doesn't fit our vision. Limiting capacities to be intimate as this moment in the way the winds blow, in the way the wave appears. So what we've been doing in our own way, each of us, these days and what will continue, is embracing this spaciousness that is our life and getting to see how, where we are unwilling, what we are unwilling to embrace as this moment, what vision we want to blinker and resist, refuse. That's why the dedication continues. The Buddha turns the Dharma wheel, or if I say it differently, the Buddha's teaching reveals for us, revealing life in all its many forms, all the many forms of this, if we call it ongoing change, or the winds of this moment, cause and effect, if I be conceptual, but we don't need to go to concepts. We don't need to hold on to or even believe those. See, that's why our zazen is tasting with our own tongue and our own mouth this moment, and even seeing what tastes are hard to touch, much less swallow, and yet when it appears in our mouth, to do our best, even if our best is spitting it out. Do our best, and in practicing, our capacity expands. Not because we decide to expand it, but because the process of being present, the process of seeing when we're believing of an illusion, when we're holding on to an illusion, when seeing and releasing an illusion, allows that capacity, which is broad and spacious, which can encompass literally everything that appears as our life. It can. It can, whether we believe it or not. And it's our practice to embrace that. Another Zen teacher, Hakuin Zenji. Hakuin lived in the 17th century. He quotes an earlier teacher, but it might just as well have been his own verse in talking about a point in ongoing practice. He quotes it, he attributes it to Daito Kokushi, or national teacher Daito. He says, in describing his life, he says, hardships come one after another. In the nature of cause and effect, enabling me to see if mind has truly dropped off attachment to world or not. Or, if I say it another way, dropped off attachment to the world and circumstances being the way I want it. Or, if not dropped off, is at least can see my attachment and the consequence of my attachment to having the world, the people I encounter, the condition of this body mind being the way I want it as opposed to the way it is. Hardships are only hardships when we resist, unwilling to be with what doesn't fit our illusions, our ideas, our limited as opposed to spaciousness, our limited ideas and capacity, when it's never so. We are not limited, except that we insist. When we insist that way, we end up being that. It's our choice, and I think all of you see this to some extent, and we all see it only to some extent. It's our choice to be present as our life. It's our choice, even when we don't see it as a choice, to be intimate and experience what appears as our life. And if we do so, then we get to be this spacious, non-harming, this spacious joyousness that we are. If we don't do so, when we don't do so, what we get is all sorts of stress and suffering. But I don't mean this in a conceptual or general way. It's always in the specific. Some of you don't like that. I keep on wanting to bring you back, bring us back to the specifics of this moment. But it's always this moment that is all we have. Truly, it's all we have in being true to who we are. We are this vast ocean of dazzling light. You are. Not we in some general amorphous, but you. You as you are. Joko, in this short interview, which you'll find a link to on the Zen Center website at some point in the near future, cites Shakespeare. She, as some of you who might have known her might recognize, she would like to cite Shakespeare and the Bible, for those were two of her favorite classical sources, among others. She says, Shakespeare said it best, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as night the day, thou canst not then be false to any man. To thine own self means to who you truly are, not to some cramped, if I say it such a way, limited vision of yourself, limited idea of yourself, much less limited self-centered attachments and beliefs, but to thine own self, meaning this life without illusion, meaning this life of vast ocean, dazzling not. Vast ocean of breeze and wind and air that reaches everywhere. See, if we truly live as that, then we can't be false to anyone else who we encounter, because all we encounter is this vast ocean, this light that they are. Then it's easy to take care of even the hardships, because they're only hardships if I hold on to what I don't want. Doesn't mean there isn't pain, doesn't mean there isn't bumping up against, but our opportunity in life is to embrace those, and our opportunity in embracing those is to expand our own capacity and skill, our own ability, and our opportunity here, sitting together, in the simple circumstances where there are no hardships, temperature's perfect, spacious room, spacious outside, light, food, no one goes hungry, no one comes around and hits you, pokes you. See, this is our opportunity to live fully who we are, to be fully who we are, to be this spaciousness, or to notice what and how and where we refuse to be ourselves, where we would rather be caught in one corner or another of body, mind, thought. thoughts and attachments and reactions. So, and if those come, they come. Now that's our opportunity when we hold to those to at some point notice. All we have to do is notice and cease that holding of itself. The vast light reveals itself of itself. Reality is shown in all its many forms. Okay, as we did yesterday, I bring this up just to give us an opportunity to clarify a little further what and how we could practice together. We still have a full day of session and the opportunity to intimately experience and be this life that we are. So I will stop now and we can speak together a little about this. If you need to, you can change positions and be comfortable. You have to speak.
You quoted Shakespeare, to thine own self be true. And then it brings to mind, you know, what is the true self?
If you remember, this was, as I indicated, Joko's line. I was quoting Joko, who quoted Shakespeare, after she had said, practice is simply living our life without illusions. So, our own true self is being free of illusions. Or, to say it a different way, it's to releasing and ceasing illusions when they arise, because illusions are only when they arise at this moment. There is no pack of illusions that I have behind me that I'm carrying along, or that any of us have behind us. But there is cause and effect illusions that we keep on grasping to. And when we grasp those illusions right there, and we grasp them not in some abstract way, but in reactions of fear and anger and greed and ignorance and confusion, and I could go on and list more, but that's where the illusion comes to play. That's what keeps us from being true to who and what we are. And we insist on our illusions sometimes. We want to argue that our illusions are really the way it is. If there's harm to us or to others, then we know that's an illusion. We know that we're holding to something. We don't always see what. Sometimes all we see is our anger or someone else's anger. Fine. Then that's what we get to work with. That's the other side, is what Hakuin said. Hardships come one after another, enabling me to see. I say to see attachments. So if we believe and feel we have this great hardship, then we know right there is attachment to the world, to who and what I should be, who and what others should be, who and what the world should be. It doesn't mean there isn't pain or suffering or harming. In fact, that's exactly what it says. Yes, there is. It happens over and over, which is what we humans do when we believe and hold on to illusions and attachments. When we're untrue to ourselves, to quote Shakespeare. Some of you might be better Shakespeare scholars than I am, so you could maybe this is the quote that Joko gave, and I think it's the usual way that phrase is stated, but sometimes you could fiddle with a word or two different editions of Shakespeare, but that's not important. We don't have to go there. If you want to, you can do that on your own, but it's not necessary. Words, whether they're mine or anyone else's, are just supports, encouragements, clarifications. Don't have to stick to them. There's many ways. Could be a vast ocean of light, or it could be a gentle breeze. Or it could be the body exposed in autumn wind.
I know that we don't have a pack of illusions behind us, but it does seem to me that I have my pet illusions that are different from others.
Mm-hmm. That's right, that's cause and effect.
And when my pet illusions collide with another person's pet illusions, uh-huh, then we have really fireworks.
Yeah.
So for example, I have a pet illusion that I'm being ditched, being abandoned. And my wife has this habit of, I don't have to check in with you all the time, you're not my boss. And so, right, because
it seems like other people have heard similar.
So we can go off wandering about the day, and I'll be back at 2, and it's a Saturday, so we don't have a lot of time together, just because I work during the week, and so it's a Saturday, I'm going to be back at 2, and then we'll da-da-da-da-da. 2 comes, 3 comes, 4 comes, I'm just smoking. And she pulls in, and she says, you're not my boss. And then, here's the best part, that kills the rest of the day. Time we do have.
It kills it. Who's that kills it?
Our...
So, first step. Where is your, let's say, your part in the killing? Because that's your practice opportunity.
Sure.
I mean, that's exactly what, when Hakuin was talking about ongoing practice, he was talking about that.
Yeah, I don't practice with it much, though.
You had the opportunity from 2 to 4.
Yes.
To
I use that opportunity to just keep stoking it. Keep scratching at it. It's bleeding, and I'm just eating away. And
keep on insisting that this is the way it should be.
Yes. Right.
This is the way it should
be. She should be.
Great. And your opportunity, especially if you hadn't been using your clicker, and notice
it would break. It would dissolve into putty.
See, that's if we can remember at some point during that time that here's my practice. What's the practice with this? What am I believing? what's skillful with this? I don't say that the beliefs don't arise, but it's up to us, not anyone else, and no one else is going to remind us, except maybe when we start feeling a little pain and anger. That's a reminder. See, those are practice friends, if I say it in that way, that let us know that there's something that's going on. I don't mean if someone is sticking you with a knife or a needle, that's pain. It's a different kind. But here, there's no one else there that was poking you, except our idea, she's doing it to me. If she had been whatever, she would show up, or she would call me, or da-da. And yet...
It does seem that there's some illusions that are so hot,
yeah,
that you don't notice them maybe until later in the day, or maybe after the eve, after sleeping. In the morning you get up and you go, okay, well, whatever.
Yeah.
But in the moment, forget it. You're just gone.
That's right.
And I can tell you that it's happened to me hundreds of times, and still I don't see it very soon.
Good. So now we know, since we've talked about it in public, you know that waiting for your wife is a sesshin time for you. Even if she arrives on time. Because even if you say, oh good, she arrived on time, right there is the opportunity to notice what you're holding and believe. That's why Joko said practice is simply living our life without illusions which cause harm to ourselves or others. Or practice is noticing in our living life what illusions we're holding on to. So that's our opportunity, and it's up to us. And you know what? When there's enough harm and stress and suffering from it, we might be willing to do the easy but seemingly harder work of noticing it and working with it, of being present with it before we spew out and throw it from our mouth or elsewhere. See, you can talk about your specific form of it, but all of us humans do it. That's why this is practice is about what we humans do. It's not some special realm for people. What we're doing here is doing what all people can do throughout their life, except this is a more efficient and effective way. And sitting is the most basic, the best part of how to do this. But there's lots of other ways, such as, you know, using when your wife is gone as a time of being practiced. So I didn't tell you that I paid her extra to be gone and extra.
Yeah, thank you.
She gets extra Buddha points for that.
I'm sure she feels that way.
Well, I wouldn't. No. Because then what happens is you open your mouth and then she opens hers and it goes back and forth. And what do we get from that? We know. You could look out in the world among people or among nations and, you know, you get wars or other things like that. Yeah.
This is my question.
You have to speak a little louder.
This isn't my original question. Maybe I'll get a chance, but thank you, Steve, because he should be my husband. But still, I don't know how do you deal with that, because what he is afraid he's being disrespected or dumped or all of those things, and wants her to prove that that's not the case. So, what can he say to himself, or how can he?
See, once you go to the explanation, then you're going in another direction. It's much more effective and skillful to notice what he's saying to himself, or how the feeling comes up, or whatever particular way it's there, and to notice that as emotion, thought, and to bodily experience being present. And if you can't do that, you see what kind of support enables you to sit, and I don't mean just physically sit, but sit and be intimate as this moment of whatever, however life is arising, including the fear and whatever, but how it is, not by knowing what it is, but by experiencing it, by breathing and being this moment of the whole universe that includes what we don't want to rest as, because it's in our capacity to do that, that we, if I say it, we get to manifest the spaciousness that we are. In our willingness to do that, that we develop the capacity to do it. And because that's what it is, this moment. This moment of being Steve includes that fear, anger, and whatever else you call that emotion, thought, bodily moment. And yet not to be limited to our idea of what it is, but to be, use, if I say it, use that to be bigger than that. I don't know how else to say it, even though I'm saying it that way. I do know lots of other ways to say it, but my saying it is only an encouragement to do it. It's in the doing that we discover what, not discover because we get some more ideas, but we discover by tasting and being. See, that the whole of this practice is not about getting new words and new ideas, but it's about moment experiencing our life. See, it's the vast ocean that we are. Being that ocean, you don't have to know about the ocean, you just are it. And you are it in all the many forms of you being human, including the forms of life and the forms of dying and the forms of death. And it's not a matter of believing it or not believing it or convincing someone. That's why our practice isn't. These words that I'm speaking and that we're speaking together are just auxiliaries and to support us in living the life without illusions. It's not the words. It's the practice, if I use that word. It's the sitting and the other forms of practice from morning to night, from breath, breath, breath.
Are you saying that anytime we're feeling fear or anger, we're holding on to an illusion?
Yes. That doesn't mean that when someone is coming at you with a knife, that you say, "Oh, that's an illusion," and stab me. No. When someone's coming with you towards you with a knife, you turn around and run the other direction. Or whatever else is appropriate. But if you hold on to the fear when no one's coming with a knife, yes. If someone's coming with a knife, there's nothing to say. Just do. Just act. Just respond skillfully to the moment. Most of the time, most of us don't have people coming at them with knives. To use the example that Steve, for using that example again, but, you know, when Karen wasn't there for 2 hours, she was on her way to abandoning him for all time and space. She was wherever she was for 2 hours. And yet, what he was doing was as if someone was coming at him with a knife over and over.
Well, okay, I mean, the reason I'm asking is because sometimes I can't tell, because I know I do tend to overreact, I can't tell if something's really dangerous.
Yes, that's exactly what our practice is about, is being present so that we can see a little more clearly. Being present so we could see our own mind, emotion, thought, habits that blind us at this moment. So the more you can see the habits, the more you can begin to be clear. And it's easy to see here in this Zendo, in this sitting, no one's coming at you with a knife. So here you have the opportunity, if I say it in such a way, and at other times in your sitting practice, and at other times in your daily life, to notice where, despite the fact that the circumstances aren't anyone attacking you with a knife, you feel something analogous to that. So that's how we begin to clarify the illusions so that they become transparent, just as these windows are transparent. And they therefore don't hinder us in seeing what's really happening, seeing when someone is coming at us with a knife, which most of us rarely encounter, I would guess. Okay, Mike.
If Steve's wife repeatedly does this, then does she suffer from some sort of illusion?
I don't know, but I don't want. I don't want to talk about. See, I think we have enough to take care of our own practice. I think we have enough to take care of our own side of the practice. And then part of that becomes, how do we speak and be with others? But we don't have to fix others. That's not necessary. Though most of us are very glad to be fixing others. And not we have all sorts of ideas about how others should be, what their illusions and how they're creating. But our practice is, how do we be with them being the way they are, since we can't really fix them most of the time? They're not interested in us fixing them. So it doesn't mean we have to put up with them doing things. We can say, you know, this, what's skillful to say if she's, I shouldn't be told. Let me say it, but don't imagine it's her. If someone is regularly 2 hours late and you actually made an appointment, we're going to meet at 2, and they don't show up till 4 once, and they don't do it twice. Good. You can maybe say to them, we have an appointment for 2, but if you're not here by 2:15, unless I hear from you, I'm going to go off and do something else. One, that might be one skillful thing. And they show up at 4 and you weren't there. Okay, and that's part of working out how we relate with other people. So we see what's skillful, but we also see what's ours to take care of and what's not our business. It's not ours to get into someone else's business, so to speak. Or we see, yeah, this person is never on time. So I'll make a 2 o'clock appointment, but you know, we'll make sure I have something to do from 2 to 4. And then we'll just meet at 4 when they show up, or 3 or 6. Or, I don't want to meet with this person because they never show up. I'm not going to make appointments with them anymore. Sorry. So, there isn't a formula. And if they were to ask you, oh, what can I do to make it work better for us? Then maybe there's something to talk about. But certainly it's not skillful to fume and spew anger when they show up when they do. Especially if you didn't have a clear agreement that you were meeting at 2, but instead you just had this expectation that they would be back at around the same time you would. No, what I'm interested in is in how we practice, not how we fix others. We all have, as I said, lots of ideas of how others need to be fixed, how the world needs to be fixed to suit me. The world. See? That's exactly what this practice is about, is how we will. There's no problems fixing the world. You could fix whatever part of it you're involved with. But if your ability to be present, to be joyous, to be your life, depends on the circumstances in the world, and changing all the other people so that they do it the way you want them to, you're guaranteed to have upset and failure and disappointment, because you have some appointment about how they should be. If you have appointments with people that they don't meet, then you're going to have disappointments. Mm-hmm. I remember one teacher used to play with that word. He said, disappointments only come when you have appointments. If you don't hold on to appointments, there aren't disappointments. So, yes, Mushi.
Just because you brought it up, I'm going to say this. I've been involved in two.
Can you speak a little louder?
Yes. And a long time ago, let's say in a previous life, I was involved in two stabbings. One was a drunken brawl, and the other one was a drug deal gone bad. And all I can say about it is, you don't feel fear during something like that. It's afterwards. Mm-hmm. During it, it's all adrenaline, rage, craziness. But from what Steve was saying, there's that experience of this anger and resentment. And all, there's a strong appeal to that. I mean, we talk about that like, oh, this happens to me and I don't like it. But we really do. There's a certain kind of addiction to that kind of thing, where the rage comes up and you're justified, and then, yes, I'm right, and that gives the self a very strong base to stand on. Yeah. And it's something that I think we seek out to some degree and revel in to some degree. And the other thing I thought of when we were talking was Joko used to draw a distinction between joy and happiness. She would say that we practice to seek happiness, but really what we find in practice is joy. We think that if we can eliminate the things we don't want and get the things we do want, then we'll be happy. But what practice teaches us is that we can be joyous in the midst of both of those circumstances.
Because joyousness is who and what we are. Joyousness is who and what we are. It's not something you need to do extra in order to get. It's not something you get. It's being the joyousness that you are. Belinda, you wanted to...
But I will say, and I have said this before, but different people have been in the room. The same story sort of reminds me of the analogy of Chinese handcuffs, where you put your fingers in, and of course, immediately you think, how do I get out of here? How do I get it? So you're pulling apart. And the only way to get out of them. And so you can think of ways to go toward the person.
I do think of ways to go toward them. I'm just waiting to go toward them. No, I know what you mean.
people arms this way.
It's easy to talk about this. It's much more difficult, and I recognize it, the difficulty, and I think that's why when in Hakowin's quote he uses the word hardship. It's difficult for us to embrace, to be present as, to experience what we're sure is going to be disappointing, what's going to be frustrating, what's going to be hard, what's going to be stressful, what we don't want, what, and you could add on the various words to describe what our illusions assure us is the way it's going to be if, and then you fill in if they're not here, if this person says that, if those people think that about me, if I get sick, if, even if I'm dying, if I lose, if someone else gets praised and I get forgotten about, if, and you could, we could all add the ifs, if my son, daughter, wife, husband, partner, friend, parent, etc., etc., does, and you could fill that in. See, we have all sorts of things that we're sure of are going to be when this ongoing change that is who we are, that is who we are, and that is who we are in terms of what we encounter, if that occurs. If so-and-so gets elected. I don't care which so-and-so. If such-and-such... That's interesting. So-and-so. That was a... if such-and-such happens. And then we do all sorts of things. And we create suffering before, during, after, and perpetuate it. So, in a way... practice is very simple. That's living our life and being willing to live in the moment without causing the harm to ourselves or others. Or at least at some point noticing and doing what's skillful when we've caused harm to ourselves or others. Michael.
Yes. Do you distinguish between illusions and assumptions?
They're different words, but I would say most illusions are based on lots of assumptions, and many of those assumptions, no, let's say, often we don't notice our assumptions. Often we don't make clear our assumptions. Often we assume things that we don't really have a basis other than our decision to assume it. I assume that if I call you up, you're going to be happy to speak to me. And if I call you up and you say, I don't have time to speak now, I'll speak to you tomorrow. Okay. I could be reasonable, so to speak, and say, okay. Or I can go, you didn't have time to speak to me. How could you not have time to speak to me? I'm your da da da. I've heard situations with things as simple as that that have led to family friction, fights, anger, people not speaking to each other for or having anything to do with each other.
You eat dinner at me also?
See, and that's the other thing, is that we can hold on to this and build on it and spin on it, and then you can see what happens among family, even among friends, where those sorts of things can just snowball because we have that ability of holding on to our illusions. So assumptions are fine as long as we know that they are just an assumption. But often we forget. So And one of the things that we get to see if we sit, not because you go looking for them, because you don't have to go looking for anything. Your job in sitting is simply being present, doing this breath, doing this moment, doing this room, doing this universe. But those assumptions seem to pop up as in the clear space that is our sitting. And we get to see them. And sometimes we get to see how we're entangled in them. And sometimes we get to see them and see them for what they are and see them come and go and not hold them. Oh, yes, I've spoken enough. Thank you.
Copyright 2013, Eliu Genmyo Smith.